Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, with the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton, color analyst Jeff Lagerman, and Jaguars.com senior editor Vic Ketchman. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Kerry Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, let the show begin. Good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by our friends at Aetna. Every Wednesday night, 6 to 8, we talk about the National Football League and the Jaguars with you. Our phone number, as it has been here for 15 years, going on 16, 355-NFL1, 800-355-NFL1. If you're listening on the internet or just outside our calling area, and of course, at Jags Voice, if you are one of those tweeterers or twitterers or however they say it. Just this one word of warning, Burrito Gallery is here this evening. Right? Downtown, they're at the beach, they're here, yeah. Lottie is sweating.
They got some good spicy green stuff to add to the salsa.
It's kind of like Mexican wasabi, right?
My nose is running like a faucet right now because my mouth is so hot and I love it.
He does. He will torture himself and then he'll have a couple of bean burritos and
I'm the same way. There's a couple things that I just can't get enough of, and that's the hot sauce with the salsa.
Okay.
And number two is horseradish. I can eat horseradish with a spoon.
Really?
Love it.
Can you do that?
No, I don't do that. Any chance we could get a sponsorship from Booze Gallery? a couple short glasses.
Yeah. You just threw it out there, ladies. We don't hold anything back on this show, which is probably why it's the most listened to
Barry,
show in Jacksonville.
Barry, did you hear that? Barry?
Who's Barry?
Mr. Z, did you hear that?
He has a very large stake in a very large wine and spirits company.
You do?
No. Barry does.
I do.
Oh, Barry. We don't know who Barry is.
No, you know him. We're just not going to say his name over the air and put him in an awkward position. All but people know people who know people.
Bring it to me.
There you go, ladies
Scotch,
and gentlemen.
Scotch, right?
No. I like bourbon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Crown Royal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. So the show's going to be fun
tonight.
If it'll
burn, I'll drink it.
Yeah, next week could be even more fun for you folks. 355-NFL-1. Where to even begin? Injury reports out.
Well, before we go to that, I must commend Vic Ketchman. I said this to him a little bit ago. The piece that he did for Jaguars All Access, which usually airs on Monday, but it aired last night because of the Monday night doubleheader, was fantastic. You are so Andy Rooney-esque. I laughed. I mean, I laughed, and Natalie had tears in my eyes. It was great.
You know, I do it with you in mind. I mean, when I'm doing this, I think, I wonder if Jeff will laugh at this.
I loved it. I mean, about Indianapolis losing. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen Vic Ketchman approach any type of piece, whether it be at Jaguars.com or anything media-wise, where the glass was half full.
I said,
That's a slap, just so you know.
I'll tell you what else I'm excited about. About the Colts because they're in last place.
Yeah, it was good. that was great television. You're finding a nice little niche. And folks, if you missed it, you got to tune in every Monday night. It's what's called Ask Vic. I mean, that's what the piece is called. Like Jaguars.com, he's got Ask Vic.
Right.
It's great.
Now the pressure's on.
It's 1 minute in a 30-minute show, right?
Yeah, but we only have 22 total minutes by the time you back the commercials out of it. So it's 1:20
part of the show.
How's the show going?
Good.
It's really good. We had good guests on. We've had Campman and Tyson Alualu and Mercedes Lewis, and then pieces. We have Brad Meester. It's a good show.
We got a nice little Monday night dynamic going on here. We got the GM Gene show from 6 to 7.
Although I'm told he doesn't like you to call him that.
He said that?
Well, I heard he didn't like it to be called the Gene Smith show.
Oh, no. He doesn't want it to be his show.
Right. But it is.
It's Jaguars.
It's his
Jaguars
show.
Monday with Gene Smith.
Yeah, I mean he didn't want it to be the Gene Smith show. But he's okay with putting his name on it.
Sure.
But that's like these titles: senior vice president / director, marketing / whatever, janitorial services. It is what it is. I mean, if your thing is coaching, then you're a coach. If your thing is sales, then you're a salesman. And in this show is it's the
Gene Smith show,
and he's the general manager, and I like to call him GM Gene. I hung that on him, and you know, I think people like to refer to him that way.
I think they do. So we do have a nice thing going on Monday night. They get you for an hour, and then us for half an hour.
And we warm him up, then we on radio, and then we turn him over to you, and it's a nice dynamic.
And you finish him off, but you know now you got to get even edgier.
Is it because I come at the end?
Yeah, you
come. See, I never see it.
Yeah, you come at the end.
I've never seen one.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Well, we'll get you a DVD of it, of the last one.
Okay.
But they actually need to run a split screen of our faces as we're watching you do it. Oh, it's good stuff.
Good. I
get edgier.
I'm flattered. I'm pleased.
You should be. It's a big part
of the
show.
It was good. I didn't like the piece about the defense, but I mean, I liked the other ones.
Wrote that with you in mind. You told me you didn't agree, so I said, oh, then I'm going to do it for sure then.
Folks, that's what makes this show so successful week in and week out. All right, now to the injury report before we take our first break. Deji Kareem, and Scotty McGee both limited in practice today. Anthony Smith did not practice today. The safety with the foot.
Yeah, but I expect him to play on Sunday. I mean, he's reached that veteran status.
He's a tough guy.
Yeah. I mean, he does. He's a guy that doesn't. Let me put it this way. I would hate to think of the Jaguars not having him on Sunday with Antonio Gates running around in the secondary.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I mean, you're gonna need all of Darryl Smith and Anthony Smith.
You know, from watching the tape, which you know it's only one game, and most people probably saw him Monday night if they stayed up late. You know, Antonio Gates over the last couple of years has kind of been slowed with foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's had a couple of soft
ankle. Yeah, I mean, you know, some type of injuries that have affected his ability to practice, affected his speed. He's got it back. I mean, he is running really well. Mm-hmm. So they're going to see him at his best.
Basketball player at Kent State.
Kent State.
Mm-hmm. You know, you find football players where you find football players. I mean, there's no boundary. You don't have to, you know, go to this school exclusively. You can find him wherever, and you can find him in other sports, too. He's not the only basketball player to have been successful in the National Football League. There was a guy named Preston Pearson, basketball player from Illinois who played in the league for a lot of years. I believe Prentice Gott of Cowboys fame was a basketball player in college.
Yeah, he was also a halfback, but he did play both sports. Mm-hmm. He was the commissioner of the Big Eight for years and years.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I didn't know
distinguished,
that.
Distinguished career in sports. Okay. Absolutely. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Thought I had an extra five in there. We have not seen the injury report from the Chargers West Coast. We probably won't see that for another hour or two. Mm-hmm. But the Jaguars are, after week one, a relatively healthy team.
Good shape. They're in good shape. Probably the best shape they'll be in the rest of this year. I mean, you know, they're going to get to the point soon where that injury report is going to lengthen.
It happens.
It happens. It has to, or you're not playing.
It happens, but I mean, you know, when you look around the league, I mean, the first week always seems to have some type of serious injury with all the teams. And I mean, heck, you had
Chris Jenkins in New York.
Jenkins had an ACL in Philly. Kevin Cobb had a concussion, didn't even look like he knew which world he was in.
Two main guys,
Ryan Grant
is going for the year, and Justin Harrell, the defensive lineman, is going for the year.
He was a defensive tackle, right?
Yeah, I mean, these are two main guys, and they looked like a Super Bowl team, and they've lost two big-time players.
Can you lose what you really haven't had? Bob Sanders is now gone indefinitely.
Yeah, but that's a big loss. I mean, heck.
They didn't have him last year.
Indianapolis, I mean, holy cow. You know, I still believe this. I mean, you take that quarterback away from that team, they're a cellar dweller.
They wouldn't win a game.
No, they'd be so well, they'd win a game.
They wouldn't win a game with Jim Sorge and that defensive line.
They would. Well, Sorge's gone, isn't he?
Yeah, Sorge is.
Yeah, Sorge's gone.
Is he in New York or New England?
Yeah, I think he's in New York.
Okay.
But he's gone. But we get your point.
Who's the backup quarterback?
They got a new
Painter,
guy.
Curtis Painter.
They had
oh, that's right,
year.
Painter. Yeah.
But, I mean, they would be a cellar dweller.
Yeah.
I mean, Peyton Manning is that good.
Might I remind you of what Curtis Painter did with the lead against the Jets?
He lost.
With them having a perfect record. I mean, he really messed his pants. I mean, what was it, 16 points in 16 seconds?
Yeah, can you imagine, though? Can you imagine being him?
No, I can imagine that when he says it like that.
Here you are. You're taking over for an undefeated team. Okay?
Right? Oh, I mean, he peed straight up, man.
How about pressure? I mean, you're taking over for, first of all, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time,
yeah,
as you would say, in the regular season.
Yes.
But then you're trying to keep perfection alive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have to worry
about
that.
Hey, Curtis, here you go. Take the reins.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah, the Colts got that going for them. They don't have to worry about that.
They got the Giants.
They won't have to rest their guys.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. More of this show. And boy, folks, you don't want to miss it. After this, on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Phone lines are open, ladies and gentlemen. Feel free to join us, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1. We've got Chris from Lakeland with a thought on television. So let's go grab that one right now. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys, just a quick question. You talk about All Access down there, and those of us from out of town, I assume it's a local television station program. You mentioned that if Vic wanted to see it, you'd have to give him a DVD. So I assume there's no way to observe it online unless you can watch it on local television.
Well, I mean, that's a good question, Vic. I mean, why don't they put that on the website?
Well, it's a matter of Mick Richards giving it back.
Didn't we agree that we would do that?
What? I mean, your segment or
no,
the whole show?
No, the whole show.
Well, I think the problem there is the footage requirements. You know, we use NFL highlights, and I don't know if you can turn around and run them.
That's a question for Dan Edwards. Yeah,
it gets sticky when we use highlights about 6 minutes. We are limited to 6 minutes of NFL highlights during our half an hour television show, and it can only we pay the license, the TV station, the Jaguars do. It can only air on those airwaves. Putting it on the web is a violation of the license, I would assume.
Well, putting the segment with Vic, though, we can do that.
Vic's segment, we could, absolutely.
So, come on, Vic, get it done.
Ryan?
Ryan, get it done.
You're over there eating a burrito.
What? Well, I'm not even going to go there.
Chris, though, good question, and we'll see if Vic can... You know, handle this and maybe get that on Jaguars.com.
Or somebody.
It would be good.
Who's enterprising, who wants to go and videotape the show with a video camera and throw it up on YouTube, you could probably get around. Well, I didn't say that.
It should
probably do that.
It should be available at Jaguars.com.
And we don't use really any highlights in the D block, so we could at least put that D block up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fun deal. We'll work on it, Vic.
You realize, though, the Colts fans would. I mean, assault.
Are you scared?
No.
You're scared.
No, I'm not scared.
You're scared.
But they would overwhelm Jaguars.com with dissent.
Well, that's what you want, right?
Not exactly.
Wait.
You got to go get a sponsor from Indianapolis.
The man who wrote the asterisk is worried about the Colts fans. Are you kidding me?
Screw him, Vic. Come on.
That's right. Screw him. Let's get that up.
Let's go find a sponsor from Indianapolis and add insult to injury and take some of their money.
There you go. Sponsor.
Exactly.
You said the magic word.
Right.
Now we've got to get it.
We'll find a sponsor, a restaurant or something where we can go eat dinner when we're in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, St. Elmo's?
Yeah, or whatever. Right. That's not the only restaurant.
Let's make this happen.
Not for me. I found another place.
In Indy.
Oh, I got a place in it. What's the name of that place? Clatta's.
Irish Pub.
Clatta's Irish Pub.
What, do you go have shepherd's pie?
No, I found it by accident, and they have the best cabbage rolls you ever tasted.
Oh, like the meat and rice wrapped in a cabbage roll? Man,
just
I used to have it all the time
world.
Growing up.
Just out of this world. Love it.
All right.
That's not like a very common menu item, but I mean, I had that growing up. It was good.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, this had corned beef in it.
Mm. Not bad.
All right, folks, we're talking food this evening as well, so bring your best stuff. 355-NFL-1 if you'd like to join us on the program. We've covered the injury report. Now where do we go? Out west?
Well, I mean, we can...
Chargers?
No, we can still touch on the Denver game a little bit. I mean, you know, the Derek Cox situation, it's going to be interesting to see how that gets solved. And, you know, there was one other area that you know, really hasn't been talked about because, I mean, I think you really got to... I don't want to say that study the game, but I mean you got to have kind of a educated eye, I guess. And it's hard. Even I during the game couldn't really tell, but after going back and watching the tape, you know, the other guy that I don't want to say I'd put him in Derek's category, but certainly did not play well according to what my expectations were. It's Terrence Knighton. I thought he played like garbage.
Really?
Yeah.
Expand on that.
He was matched up against a rookie, J.D. Walton.
Yeah, their center.
Got reached a few times in the ball game. Got pushed around a little bit. I mean, my expectations for Terrence Knighton is to be a dominant player.
And he had a bad day. Maybe the heat got to him?
He was better later than he was early.
And the heat didn't get to him then.
No.
Huh.
No. So, you know, I mean, this week, Nick Hardwick?
Hardwick.
I mean, he's a heck of a lot better than J.D. Walton.
Mm-hmm.
Tyson Alualu was solid. I mean, good game for the first one out of the box. Campman was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Harvey was solid. Mincy was a contributor.
Mm-hmm.
But Knighton, I mean, the guy that we really expected to be, you know, maybe an elite player at the nose tackle spot, you know, a 4-3 nose tackle. He wasn't anywhere near elite. I mean, it's disappointing.
Hmm. I never expected to hear that. I hadn't even noticed him.
I don't want to say
either
garbage.
Way.
Okay, Derek Cox. might want to put some of that. You know,
he had a really really bad day. And
Terrence Knighton had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Cox had a terrible day.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe that Derek Cox has a foot problem. He sent some signals after the game in a interview that in which I participated that were the kind of signals an intelligent man who wants to avoid sending signals but wants to send something in a subtle way does. He talked about his foot injury in the summer, and then when we asked him, "What do you need to improve to become a better player, to get out of this slump?" He said, my footwork. So I got a bad foot, and I need to fix my footwork. I think, you know, that kind of told me that he's got problems down below.
This wasn't a one-game
He's slipping.
Aberration.
He's slipping all over the place, Jeff. He can't
well, I mean,
keep his feet.
In the preseason, you know, we said he's not playing all that well. We hear that he has, you know, maybe an injury or something, and so kind of got a pass, right?
Yes.
You know, we kind of said, eh.
There was an element of concern.
Let him get healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's going to be okay. And then first one out of the gate, you're like, whoa. And then when the coaching staff takes you out, and you've had a terrible day.
Jack Del Rio said today he will be the starter on Sunday. They are committed to him.
Committed to him until he doesn't play well.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, that's
every year,
the reality.
Every week it'll get earlier. And then at some point he'll lose his job if he doesn't.
If he doesn't get better, yeah.
Doesn't get better, yeah.
Yeah, because David Jones played pretty well, and they were having to line David up almost every play. His defensive backs, David's turning around, going, "Okay, where do I go and who do I got?"
Yeah, he ended up playing 23 snaps a week after signing.
You know, and give credit to Considine and Anthony Smith for really helping, and Rasheen for helping him out. You know, getting him where, and William Middleton at times, for getting him where he needed to be, to where at least he could, you know.
I want to tell you something.
Have a clue.
That's not going to work in San Diego.
No, that won't work.
You can't play football like that against this team and win. You know, the Chiefs got lucky on special teams. They threw for 62 yards in the game. I don't know how they won the game, but the Chargers obviously.
Big plays.
You know, yeah, big plays. The Chargers obviously were not hitting on all four, six, or eight cylinders. But for their home opener, I don't believe you can play that way in the secondary and have any chance to win.
All right, folks, we are due for news here at the bottom of the hour. We will return 90 more minutes of Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Jaguars fans, check out the Fan Zone section of Jaguars.com and see how you can win Jaguars tickets and some great Jaguars merchandise. Just look for the list of participating Parts House Car Care Centers, the Parts House official sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Sexton, Loggeman, Ketchman, Jaguars This Week rolls along. 855-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1. Got a tweet from a guy who is just as honked off as can be at all of the post-game comments from the national
folks. Asvik is getting killed. My inbox is getting killed with people who are outraged at Greg Easterbrook, outraged at Jerome Bettis, outraged at Woody Page, outraged at Don Banks.
He took another shot this today.
Yeah, what did Don say today?
I'm calling it up. It's in his power rankings.
Well, what did the others say?
Oh, Greg Easterbrook.
Called it a third full. A third empty.
A third empty before halftime and said that basically accused the Jaguars of lying about their attendance. He said there's no way 63,000 people, 63,636 people were in this stadium. He's right. The Jaguars never said the attendance was 63,636. They said the tickets distributed were 63,636. I know the turnstile count on Sunday, and by the way, it will be posted. It will be revealed in Asvik tomorrow as part of this great transparency. Hey, we got to have transparency, right? You know, I'm getting misinformation all around. I got misinformation coming from the media. I got misinformation coming from the fans. The fans are saying it was a sellout. It wasn't a sellout. Greg Easterbrook is saying the Jaguars lied about 63,000 fans there. The Jaguars never said 63,000 fans were there. Jerome Bettis says in his, I guess he has a column in Sports Illustrated.
That's what I'm told.
Or is it ESPN?
Well, I don't. No, it's Sports Illustrated.
Sports Illustrated.
And the basic tenet of his was that Jacksonville has outlived its usefulness as an NFL.
Well, he says it's no longer a viable market. He's saying that it's now clear that it's peaked. That was the word he used. It's peaked. It's clear it's peaked and it's going backwards. And he said they should relocate. Real simple. He said the franchise should relocate. And
I got Don Banks coming.
Go ahead. Okay. Give me that one.
Here's Don, and this is today. He says, I heard it from Jags folk last week about my aside that Tim Tebow's visit might prompt the only sellout of the season in Jacksonville. Not true, I was told repeatedly. The first four or five home games of the year look like sellouts and will be shown on local TV. Here is the shot.
Wait.
Here's the shot.
What did you just read?
I'm reading.
Which he's incorrect right there.
It's his note in his NFL power rankings.
Would you do it again, please, because I missed something.
Okay. The first sentence is right, or the first two or three sentences. I heard it from Jag folk last week about my aside that Tim Tebow's visit might prompt the only sellout of the season in Jacksonville. Not true, I was told repeatedly. The first four or five home games of the year look like sellouts and will be shown on local TV. Here's the shot. See what you can do when you drop ticket prices and tarp off part of your stadium's upper deck.
That's a shot.
Yeah.
But he was wrong. It wasn't a sellout. Tim Tebow did not sell the building out. They said, oh, he'll sell it out. He didn't sell it out. There's 264 seats in this building. For this place to be sold out, you have got to announce 67,264 tickets distributed. They announced 63,636, which is just under 3,600, right? 3,600 or so unsold tickets. So you were 3,600 or so tickets shy of a sellout. And everyone keeps throwing this word sellout around. And there was no sellout here. All they did was sell enough of the general bowl tickets to be able to lift the blackout. Lifting the blackout is not a sellout. And then we got also the confusion as it pertains to tickets distributed and actual attendance. There's only one team in the league that announces actual attendance. That's the Steelers, and they do it for a particular reason there. Every other team in the league, it was my understanding at least a year ago, announces tickets distributed. That includes Tampa. That includes Jacksonville. What we got is a whole lot of misinformation going on. I don't believe a third of the stadium was empty before halftime. And I've talked about the others, the confusion with apples and oranges, actual attendance and tickets distributed. And it was not a sellout. So, everybody wants transparency, and now we got this fuel chart which is another attempt at absolute transparency by the Jaguars. They're going to tell you exactly how many tickets are remaining for each game. I mean, you could do it right there, Brian.
Is it up already?
Go ahead, yeah. I mean, I wrote the story yesterday, and the charts inside the story, you'd access the link, and it'll tell you how many tickets are available for the Eagles game. How many general bowl tickets have to be sold for the Eagles game for it to be on TV? So, I mean, you know, once you get there, it's 2,000 and something, like 2,600. And that's what it's going to take. I have no doubt they'll sell that allotment, and the game will be on TV. But when they get toward the end of the year, those last three games, you're talking then about 10,000.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot of tickets to move.
Which is kind of where San Diego is at for the game this week.
That's right. They're going to announce tomorrow at 1 o'clock Pacific time that Sunday's game will be blacked out.
And Dean Spanos all but said that on Monday. So okay, here we go. There is a fuel gauge, so to speak. It's a bar graph. And for the Eagles, 48,325 general bowl tickets have been sold. And tickets left, 2,632. Colts, 31,29. Titans, the Monday night game, 69,51. Texans, 84,30. Those are the games, I think, that Mackey alluded to in your story that he believed would get on TV.
Yeah.
Beyond that, now you're 97, 10-1, 24, and 10-4, 43 for the Browns, the Raiders, and the Redskins.
Okay, the Chargers, Qualcomm Stadium, seats 70,000 approximate. That's the problem. That's the problem in San Diego. It has too many seats. And we had that problem here for years and years. The thing has been sized down to fit the market now. And I think in a market of this size that has only one major league sport, I think 67,000 is a doable number. And we're getting there. One game played, one game on TV. This is what I consider to be the ingredients for a successful future in Jacksonville. I'll be quick. I think there are three ingredients. Number one, get through this season without any blackouts. That'll give this franchise forward momentum going into 2011. Number two, no lockout.
Yeah, that's
labor
huge.
Peace. And a CBA in which this franchise and other small market franchises like it can operate successfully. Number three, a better football team. All right? Come kickoff in 2011, if we're up in that press box next year on opening day and the Jaguars are coming off a season with no blackouts in 2010, if
they have a season,
if we're kicking it off and there wasn't a lockout with full of enmity and you know discord, and it produced a CBA that allows teams such as this to operate successfully, and if the team is in ascent, it's getting better, and there's no doubt in my mind, as long as Gene Smith is the general manager of this team will get better every year.
Guy's
all right?
A freaking genius.
He is. He really is. If we have those three things on opening day next year, then this baby is going to soar. This franchise is going to prosper. It's gonna have a successful run. Its future is going to be safe. We need those three things, and it starts with this thing. Getting through this season without any blackouts. If there any games are blacked out this season, especially if it's at the end of the year, which would kill all that momentum you build all year long, it's going to be a bummer. It's going to be a major bummer. And if you people think I don't know what I'm talking about, those of you who read Jaguars.com and ask Vic will remember that last summer, in the summer of 2009, I warned you. I told you what the national media would do to this town. I told you it was going to be they were going to kick our butts if the attendance was as bad as it appeared it would be. And it was, and look what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to go away until this town can get through a season without any blackouts.
All right, folks, we are due for a break here. Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars Rewards card when you purchase at least 10 gallons of gate gasoline. You'll get $2 back in JagBucks. For details, go to Jaguars.com. More to come. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Only on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, and who isn't these days, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart, 6 Jacksonville location Stein Mart. More fashion, less price. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Lagerman, Joe Fortunato, John Dineen. And we are hanging tight here on a Wednesday evening. Let's go to some phone calls. And we'll start with Kevin, who's up the road in Savannah. Hey, Kev, what's going on?
Hey, how are y'all? I had a statement and then a question, if I could. I thought the offensive line played very well on the pass blocking. And on the running, it was so-so. And aside from that one holding call, what would elevate the offensive line and their performance was the lack of those penalties, which we became accustomed to last year, the holding and the procedure. And I thought the lack of that really elevated the offensive line. And my question, I guess, is for Jeff. On the TV timeouts after a change of possession, the team seemed to go to the field. What kind of conversing are the players allowed to have with the coaches during that time? Are they required to stay away from the coaches, what's the rule on that?
On TV timeouts, they can do whatever they want. When there's a stoppage of play, they can go to the sideline. You know, the coaches can't go on the field, but you know, the players can meander over there towards the sideline, have all the conversation they want. Just to kind of comment on some of the things that you said. The offensive line did play well in pass protection. David was sacked one time. I thought Eugene Monroe was just simply fantastic. That's the best game he's had as a pro. He was the superstar of the offensive line. He did everything that you would expect out of a top five pick to do. I mean, he was lights out. Eben Britton was probably the guy that, you know, you kind of said, well, hey, you want to see him pick it up a little bit, but then you say, well, I mean, he's coming off a calf. He didn't participate a lot in the preseason. The holding call on Smiley was borderline. I thought it was a good block watching it on tape. The referee threw the flag, so, you know, the false start, it's an aggressive penalty. I'm okay with that. Kevin, you made a comment about the run blocking was okay. I think it was better than okay. I mean, coming off a preseason in which Maurice Jones-Drew was -2, I mean, look at the numbers. Maurice averaged 4.3 a carry. Rashad Jennings, 6.5. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's real good. As a matter of fact, in the first regular season game, like I said, coming out of a preseason in which you just really chose not to run it a whole lot. I thought that was really good. Because my expectations weren't for Maurice to get nearly 100.
Right.
My expectations weren't for Rashad Jennings to get 6.5 a rush.
I thought the Jaguars, except for their pass defense, played a sensational game on Sunday. They played their best at crunch time. That's what I always want in a football team. I want to see the best foot forward at crunch time, and they did that. They were great in the heat.
+2.
+2 in turnovers, +2 in sacks.
Special teams were lights out.
The quarterback was very careful with the ball, and it's about time. You know, aggressiveness is a wonderful thing, and we're in this go for it era. You know, everybody is go for it. You know, I play to win. What the hell are the other guys doing? Playing to lose? You know, every once in a while, you got to...
David, this is great Monday night.
Wait, that sounds like a shot at the coach.
Well, every once in a while, you got to show some restraint. And there was a particular play, 3rd and 6, where they're trying to milk the clock, and they can't pull the plug yet. So you want your quarterback to throw, but you don't want him to throw a ball unless...
I'm trying to think of the one you're talking about.
It's 3rd and 6. It was like 5-6 minutes to go in the game. And he dropped back, and he didn't have anybody wide open, so he tucked it for a 3-yard gain, sat down, punt, you know, instead of forcing it somewhere, getting a tip, getting an interception, that sort of thing. Hey, you're not always, sometimes not losing is winning. You know, it's not always play to win. Sometimes you gotta play to survive.
Good point.
Grab another call here before we break for news at the top of the hour, and it's Steve in Arlington. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. Just talking about the attendance. I hate to take time off on your show, but Vic was talking about it. But I took my granddaughter Sunday, and we had some touchdown club tickets on row C, row 3 behind Tebow. And, by the way, row 4 was almost empty. But there were so many people there that when we went to the inside for the air conditioning, all the tables were full. There were no seats. We came an hour early, had to eat our lunch on the floor. And so at halftime, I said, let's leave early, go up there, and we can get a snack and a drink. Again, we're on the floor. Yeah, and I'm pushing 70, but no big deal. But then when the lightning started, we had to go back again. And again, we're on the floor. So the accommodations need to improve.
Well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This was a tough circumstance. You know, you bring 58,000 people, that's a hint, to a ballpark, and you fry them, you electrocute them, and you drown them. You know, and that's a tough circumstance. I mean, it's tough for the people. And it's tough for the team. When the lightning started, how are you going to shelter all these people? You know, you don't have a barn to take them to. It's a very tough circumstance, and it brings up an interesting conversation maybe for another night. You know, what about 10, 15 years from now, if this thing is really flourishing and they're going to consider either renovations to this, because I'm going to tell you, 30 years appears to be the time limit on these ballparks. You got to start pumping money into them somewhere or build a new one around 30 years. What do they do here? Do they maybe build a dome? I got to tell you, Jeff, Florida people are weather sissies. They are weather sissies. There's no question about it. I mean, this is not a hardy lot, and they want their comfort. Maybe down the road, they're going to have to consider, you know, building the big barn. You know what I mean?
An enclosed dome?
The people, were suffering on Sunday. They
live in it every day.
Yeah, but Jeff, they...
Sunblock
they really water. They were struggling. I'm getting these stories about people, you know, passed out in the near the concession stand.
They got to hydrate. They got to prepare. They got to, you know, I mean, you got to be prepared for.
They got a very short range of temperature.
Maybe they just, you know, build this giant roof
70
over the whole stadium.
70 to say 85, 86. You know, they got about a 15 degree range. And above that or below that,
right, hold on.
They're either on fire or freezing.
Bring Steve back up, because Steve, my question to you is you said that maybe something's got to be done about this. You were talking about, what do you need more, a seat to sit down and eat?
Well, that's one thing, but the only reason I called was to say that the attendance was so large that the place was full.
I got you.
And Vic took off and went off in an orbit about that, but I wasn't complaining.
The attendance was so large that what was too small? What was too small?
Well, we had to sit on the floor to eat 3 different times.
But do you expect them to build a club that seats 58,000 people? I mean, you can't have 58,000 seats outside and 58,000 seats inside. You can't do that.
Well, this was the touchdown club. I think there's if they don't have the seats for it, they shouldn't sell the tickets
for it.
Well,
let me ask you this, Steve.
Uh-huh.
How about this novel idea? Yeah. How about sitting in a seat outside and eating?
I did. Oh. It was 102 degrees, and we stayed there until halftime and went back in, but there's no place to sit.
Because you can't put 11,000. That's, by the way, Steve, how many touchdown club seats there are, how many tickets they sell. You can't put 11,000 seats outside and 11,000 seats inside.
Again,
that's 22,000 seats.
Complaining. I'm just telling you how the crowd was there. People say there weren't that many people there.
Oh, there was plenty of people.
There were.
Plenty of people.
There were plenty of people there. We enjoyed the game. We broiled, and we left after the lightning. So,
thanks for coming, Steve, and bringing your granddaughter. We appreciate it.
Going to do it again.
Great. Thank you, Steve.
That's the future here.
Bye.
We have to break for news. It's next on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the new 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta only at your local Southern Ford dealer. Sexton, Loggeman, Ketchman, Fortunato, join us. 800-355-NFL1, 355-NFL1. And, of course, you can always check in via Twitter, at Jags Voice. We've grabbed a couple of questions from there this evening. Here's a question for you, Jeff. Who gets the call to cover Antonio Gates? And is he the best tight end in the league? I mean, in terms of receiving tight end, he's not a complete picture, but is he the prototypical
receiving
tight end?
Yeah, I mean, he probably is. I mean, Tony Gonzalez is not the same. He's still good. I mean, he's still really good.
And Vernon Davis up in San Francisco just got paid.
Yeah, I'm not ready to jump on his bandwagon yet, just because, I mean, you got to prove it year after year. You got to be a dependable guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the most complete tight end is right here in Jacksonville, right. Mercedes, because right. He's such a good blocker and he's more than a capable receiver. But yeah, Gates is really, really good. The only thing that he doesn't have is super speed at the tight end position, like, you know, Tony Scheffler has, like Todd Heap, I think, had at one point. He probably doesn't have it anymore. Gonzalez, I think, had some pretty nice speed early on. Gates is not a fast guy, but he runs really good routes, and he's got a little, I guess, Keenan McCardell in him, and he just knows how to get open.
He's Dallas Clark with more explosion.
Yeah, and, you know, I watched Dallas Clark Sunday night. Not Dallas Clark Sunday night, but another one people always talk about, Jason Witten.
Yeah, Dallas.
He doesn't look very good to me.
He's a slower guy. He's all hands.
Yeah, he's...
He's a possession receiver.
Yeah, and you know, when you're a possession receiver and you can't block. Yeah,
he's
but Dallas Clark is the fast guy.
Yeah.
You know, but I like Gates. I mean, I think he's a tremendous player.
Well, without Vincent Jackson, who has not reported and wouldn't be eligible if he reported this evening because of a suspension, you know, Gates would seem to become their primary target. And how do you play him?
Well, I mean, with the other receivers that they have, I mean, what's the Nane? Yeah,
Malcolm Floyd and Legadu Nane.
Legadu Nane. Nane had big numbers, but, I mean, he's not a guy that scares you. Floyd's not a guy that scares you. So there's... I mean, I would certainly not hesitate to put two guys on Gates. I mean, he's that good. You know, the one thing I was surprised about in their game against Kansas City is how limited the role was for Darren Sproles. I mean, wasn't he the feature guy last year?
Oh, but they drafted Matthews in the
first I know,
round.
But I mean, don't you find a way to utilize a guy like Darren Sproles on third down?
I think they're afraid of overusing him.
With the back?
He only touched it 7 times in the game.
That's surprising.
And that was mostly,
five rushes for 3 yards and 2 carries, yeah, or 2 receptions for 2 yards.
Yeah, and that's on offense. I mean, he touched the ball a bunch because the Kansas City had to punt like 10 times in that game. So he's their punt returner and he's their kick returner. So he had a lot of touches on special teams. But, I mean, how can you not find more of a role for him on third down? I mean, you can have him and the rookie on the field at the same time.
San Diego, the Chargers, excuse me, they leave me cold in a couple of ways. Number one, they seem to underachieve. Number two, what is their general manager, A.J. Smith, doing with the Vincent Jackson thing? Why didn't you get this done? I'm really, for all the money you've spent on this team and for this window of opportunity.
Well, how about the left tackle?
Marcus McNeil. Marcus,
well, he's got an injury too, right?
Does he?
Does he not?
Not that I know of. No, yeah.
He has been plagued with a back since he came into the league. He's a great big tall guy.
Well, there's the point. The kid from Auburn, Marcus
McNeil,
and Vincent Jackson. I mean, you've spent all this money. You've got this window of opportunity. It's going to close on you here. It's going to close on you. You're going to use up Antonio Gates. You're going to use up. You've already used up LaDainian Tomlinson. You're going to get to this point where your window is going to close on you, and you won't have realized the success that you should have realized. So why are you now at the peak? This has got to be their year. They are at that point now where it's got to get done, or it ain't going to get done. So why would you squeeze Vincent Jackson now? This isn't the time. You finally identified a true star to go with Phillip Rivers in the passing game and Antonio Gates, so that you got that that big-time wide receiver and the big-time tight end and the big-time quarterback and the big-time pass-blocking, blindside blocker, and you squeeze two of them right out of the picture. I don't get it.
Don't you get the impression that he takes negotiations very personal?
Oh, there's no question he does.
I mean, he takes a lot of things personal.
And then the guy with the Broncos, the old guy Williams, used to be with the Chargers.
Jamal Williams.
Yeah.
The nose tackle.
Yeah. So, I mean, what did they do with him? They let him go, too?
Let him go.
Yeah, they need him.
Let him go. Well, the guy.
Why are they being so cheap?
Well, the guy that they actually have in there playing where Jamal Williams is at, his name is Antonio, and I'm not sure of the pronunciation yet. Is it Garay or Gary?
I haven't seen their news release. I don't know, but it's Garay.
He's pretty good. He's really good.
Well, if one more, it'd be a lot better because they're 27th in the league against the run after one game, and that's not good.
No, it's not good, but I mean, that defense right there, they could play. And they can really play. So they can do some things with the backers that they have. And I don't know what's up with Sean Merriman. He was a scratch this past weekend. But the guy that they've got behind him, Larry English, he was a high pick a couple years ago.
He was a first-round pick.
Yeah, he was a first-round pick. He's pretty good. Sean Phillips is the man, though. He's the guy you better know where he's at.
Mm-hmm. How about the inside guy, Stephen Cooper? And Kevin Burnett.
Cooper's a real steady, you know, I would say kind of like a Darryl Smith type, and not quite that good, but a Darryl Smith type. Kevin Burnett's probably a little flashier.
He made a couple of plays in the offensive backfield.
He's a little flashier, but not as steady as a Stephen Cooper. But the linebacker, you know, as always, to play a 3-4, you have to have linebacking talent. They got it.
Mm-hmm. 355 NFL 1. Let's grab a quick call before we take our first break of hour number 2. Lee's out in Ponte Vedra. Good evening, Lee.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. You kind of addressed some of what my question was. I wanted to know how you thought we matched up, what the scouting report is. 8-point underdogs, but I don't know. I think that's a good bet. I'll take it off the air. Thanks,
well,
guys.
I'll tell you what I think. I think the Jaguars are heading into an ambush. I think you're going out there to get a team that has been slapped across the face, and I'll be surprised if the Jaguars can win in San Diego Sunday with anything but their very, very best performance. You're not going, and I thought they were great Sunday.
Sure.
I think it'll take that and more because you can't play like that in your second.
Well, and you just have to base what happened last year on the West Coast, 61-3. They scored one field goal, so it's not like you can have a lot of confidence today. They got to go out there and do it.
You know what I don't want to see happen, though? I don't want to see them go out there and lose, and then everyone, they just can't play on the West Coast. I mean, I don't want to go through that crap again. you know what I mean? You're going out to play the San Diego Chargers, who are a consensus pick,
they're
an overwhelming
team.
Pick to win the AFC West, and a lot of people are picking them for the Super Bowl. So, you know, last year, Seattle was a dog. That one stuck. And there were some shenanigans involved there too with Mike Sims Walker and Quentin Groves, and then San Francisco was maybe a little underrated, but they laid an egg there too. But this time, the Chargers are a real football team.
I want to see, you know, I don't expect the Jaguars to go out there and kick butt, you know, as far as, you know, go out there and just control the game, you know, come back victorious. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't expect them to go out there and get hammered. Mm-hmm. But what I want to see is to them to go out west mm-hmm. and play a competitive game that comes to the wire.
I'm with you.
Win or lose.
Yeah, because I don't want to go through that circadian rhythm crap again.
Well, you know, since you bring it up real quick. You know, they're going
circadian
out.
Circadian rhythm?
Yeah, it's the biorhythm.
Your bio clock, you know. And, 3 hours difference, and you just can't get up in the morning.
Yeah, but if we lose, next year we can go out Sunday morning.
you've been waiting all show to do that.
Hey, they're leaving normal time on Saturday, which puts them out about 9 o'clock at the hotel, East Coast time, mm-hmm. right? About 6 o'clock Pacific time, mm-hmm. and then it's essentially a 1 o'clock game for them the next day. Logs, you've made a trip to the West Coast.
I hated going out on Friday.
I hated it. I absolutely hated it
as a player. I hate it now. It's too much downtime.
Absolutely.
You know, you get up there and you're twiddling your thumbs. You know, and you know, what's the old saying, Vic? when you don't have something to do, idle time.
Mine is the devil's workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the time I took my fourth walk in San Francisco,
you were ready.
I was ready to leave my heart.
I like going out there on Saturday, keep the same routine. You get to bed early, you have an early bed check for West Coast time. You wake up, you have a breakfast available. You treat it like a 4 o'clock game on the East Coast.
Yep.
You get it done, you get on a plane, you come home.
I remember I went out.
So you like what they're doing this
year? Yeah, I didn't like what they did last year. Never did.
I remember when I went out Saturday afternoon in San Francisco, I was starving. And I went into a five and dime store and bought some giant candy bar. I mean, like, you know, this enormous Kit Kat or something. And I think that's what caused the heart attack. I think I got that stuck in there.
Maybe.
I mean, I went back to the hotel and it was like, you know, I was looking around, don't steal my candy bar, you know.
We need to break, ladies and gentlemen. More to come. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna right after this on News Talk Radio. WOKV, depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Visit Sports Mania today for your chance to win the ultimate Jaguars game day experience, a limo ride, club seats, and Sky Lounge tailgate party passes when the Jaguars play the Colts here at the stadium. Register for free at your closest Sports Mania in Jacksonville and head to Everbank Field in style. Back on Jaguars This Week, about to 38 minutes left in our program. Go to the west side, bring Greg into the program. Hello, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Brian. Hey, Vic. Hey,
Hello.
Jeff. I wanted to comment real quick on the whole Chargers game we're going to be playing on Sunday. I heard the comments that Vic was making about the ambush. I like to take it from another spin. I watched that game on Monday, and I can tell you, I'm not sure. I believe, honestly, watching that game, that there's something definitively wrong in the Chargers organization, because watching that team, they did not play like a perennial Super Bowl contender. They were in complete disarray. And I can tell you, the Jags, they go out there and they can, in the very beginning, they can go out there and assert their will in the ground game, get that clock controlled, and keep Phillip Rivers off the field. They will win that game. They're going to play just like they play Indianapolis. Keep the passing game off the field, and they'll win it, because basically that's what the Jags have to do. They have to dictate the Chargers what type of game is going to be played. And
I think you've made an astute observation.
That's good.
Your first point is a very astute observation. I think there is something fundamentally wrong with the heartbeat of that franchise.
Well, if you think about something that changed from last year to this year with that franchise. LT is gone, Jamal Williams is gone, Antonio Cromartie's gone, Kasim Osgood is gone, right?
Those
Marcus McNeil and Vincent Jackson are still have holdouts. I mean, you're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys that are or were Pro Bowlers. Gone.
They lost their toughness when they lost Marty Schottenheimer, and now their personality, what's left of their toughness, is embodied by Phillip Rivers, and that's nice. But you know, you need a coach to give you that kind of leadership too. And I don't think North Turner gives it to him.
355-NFL-1. We appreciate the phone call. 355-6.
Remember how soft they were at the early part of last season?
Yeah.
They were giving up horrible amounts of
yeah,
yardage.
But you know one thing I love about them? I love Phillip Rivers.
He's a tough guy.
I mean, he is a tough guy playing the quarterback. He's a linebacker playing quarterback.
I agree with you. I think he is the tough guy on that team, and if they lose him, they're really in.
Well, they gave him like a $92 million contract last year, something like that. Tremendous player, but he's still, even though I love the guy, that throwing motion. I mean, it's just, he doesn't have an elbow. His elbow's like attached to his side.
Like an old man.
And he throws kind of funny, but I mean, he throws well.
He pushes it, but he gets it there.
He does.
What did you see in their offensive line? McNeil, obviously a tremendous player, not there. Dombrowski, a guard.
Yeah, I had to actually go and read his bio, because I actually played college ball with Jim Dombrowski, who was first-round pick of the Saints, and I was going, man, did he have a kid that quick? Not the same Dombrowski. Maybe related family wise, somewhere along the line. But yeah, he's a guard, and you know, that's another thing about San Diego's offense is that, you know, they're having to kind of protect him a little bit. So, you know, you're not getting as many people out in the routes because you're having to kind of cover up because you're not, you don't have a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. The rest of the offensive line, I mean, they're good players. I mean, are they great? No. The center's, you know, is a good player.
Hardwick.
Excuse me, the left guard, right guard, Dielman and Vasquez. I mean, they're good players. I mean, they're not great. Clary, the right tackle, good player, not great. I take this offensive line here until all day long.
Rookie Matthews is outstanding.
I ain't on that bad.
Okay, I disagree with you then. I think he is going to be an outstanding player for them.
He may run, be one day
catch, you know, the whole thing.
Well, what didn't you like about him?
I mean, he runs hard. He's a pretty good sized back. He doesn't have very good vision. You know, maybe that's, you know, first game. He's still kind of trying to learn where he needs to run. But I've always been a believer in that the great backs have vision no matter what play they're running. And I don't see great vision out of him. I see him missing some cuts. But he does run hard. I mean, I like the way he runs. I like the way he plays the game. But, I mean, that's my biggest complaint. He's got speed. He's tough. He runs hard. But the great backs have vision and find the hole. And he didn't find the hole in Kansas City from watching the tape. He got, what, 75 yards rushing?
Yeah, 19.
He should have had 125, and he didn't get 125, and he fumbled.
He said after the game, for whatever it's worth, in the post game, he was talking about the offensive line, and he said, and I didn't pay attention. I wasn't seeing what they were doing up front. So he admitted after the game.
Well, he was right on the money in his self-evaluation.
Yeah.
And, you know, from watching that tape, the guy that I at one point was almost considered a bust in Kansas City, Johnson.
Derek Johnson, the
Derek
linebacker.
Johnson?
95.
Linebacker.
Wow, is he Lafee? He is playing really well. He got the fumble. He caused the fumble on the back. But that guy was all over the field and striking anything that was in an opponent's uniform.
Just on a Kansas City thing real quick, they were raving about Tyson Jackson and Glenn Dorsey, and we didn't see anything from them last year.
Tyson Jackson was actually better, and I thought he was garbage last year.
Yeah,
I thought he really has improved his play. But, I mean, what was he? What overall pick? Four?
Three.
Third. He was a third overall pick.
Third.
A third overall pick on a 3-4 defensive end that you're taking off the field on third down?
Mm-hmm. He's not Richard Seymour.
No. I mean, he's better. He's better than he was last year. He plays the run extremely well. But if you got to take him off the field, you don't use a third overall pick on that guy.
Nope. Grab one quick call here before we break, and we'll go with Patrick on the south side. Patrick, you got about 90 seconds, pal. Make your point.
Okay, on the pass interference call that allowed Denver to go ahead and score, from what I could see, it looked like that guy never could make it back to the ball. What do you guys think?
Who was that on again?
Was it tipped?
Well, no, that was... Oh, you're talking about the pass interference on Derek Cox at the goal line?
Right.
Could he have gotten back to make it? Probably not, but the officials don't make the call based on that. And I thought, you know, from the one replay angle that we saw in our booth, that really the receiver kind of ran into Derek.
Where it kind of fell at his knees.
Yeah, watching it on tape, I think Derek pushed him. Mm-hmm. So I got a different perspective from watching the film, and I think the officials got it right.
Hey, the Jaguars got lucky. If that Brandon Lloyd one-handed catch where he gets 1 foot down, if those are the old rules, that's a force out and that's a touchdown.
No.
No.
No, that wasn't a force out. His momentum carried him out. That wouldn't even with the old rules, that wouldn't have.
I know one guy disagrees with the other than me.
Okay.
Gene Smith, he said we got lucky there.
Well, I disagree with Gene on that one. I think his momentum carried him out anyway. Patrick, the officials don't take into account whether the ball could have been come back. Now, even if a ball's 20 yards overhead and it's deemed an uncatchable ball, you know, I guess even then they could pick it up. But still.
Real quick. First play of the fourth quarter, the throw to Brandon Lloyd down the sidelines where they reviewed it, and it looked like his knees hit down out of bounds.
I still think he was out of bounds.
I do, too. I can't.
I thought the toes on his left foot touched the grass.
Here's the problem, okay, reversing that call. The call on the field takes precedence, right? It always does.
It has to be always conclusive.
It has to be indisputable evidence. That's the terminology. Mm-hmm. Was there indisputable evidence? No. It looked like
hey, Jeff,
his knee was out of bounds before anything else.
If they had been playing on regular, you know, rye type of grass where the blade stands up instead of Bermuda where it lies down, you'd have seen the blades of grass move. I swear, his toes on his left foot
would have
moved the tops of the grass, and then it would have been that would have made it indisputable.
Yes, Joe.
But he caught the ball and then went down. His upper body and the ball hit the ground.
But did it hit before his thigh?
Before his legs went out.
See, that's where.
So isn't he down?
Yeah, one knee is worth 2 feet.
Well, that's the question. Did it hit first?
His knees were out of bounds too.
Right.
But his upper body and the ball hit the ground before even his knees.
Well, that's what we're arguing. Did his upper body hit the ground before the knees?
I thought they did.
Or the toes that were out of bounds? And see, I don't think so. But here's the thing. There was not indisputable evidence to overturn it.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Bueller Swiss Watch Company, proud to be the official watch of the Jags. Bueller Swiss Watch is available at Allen's Jewelers in Jacksonville, Robison Jewelry Company in Fernandina Beach, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, and Kingsley Jewelry in Orange Park. More to come. Jaguars This Week returns on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Hey, folks, if you didn't see it, Joe Fortunato led the charge to Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue this week. Monday and Tuesday, after a home win, you get a free barbecue pork sandwich at the official barbecue restaurant of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Sonny's. So after the Jaguars win Monday, Tuesday, keep your ticket stub and go and cash in. You just got to get there before Joe does.
I want to know how all of us can win, but you can't.
Oh, I can.
Why?
No, I said I can't.
Oh, you can. You can win.
I didn't ask you to turn your microphone on.
And that bothers me. Why?
Here we go. 355-NFL-1. Jim is on the south side. Hey, Jim, what's going on tonight?
Hey, guys. First off, I'd like to thank you for all the work you guys do. I love, like, the Ask Vic column and stuff on Jaguars.com.
Yeah, it's all right. I get paid for it.
I wanted a couple things real quick. First off, great compliment to the stadium at Everbank. My wife got ill at halftime because of the heat, and the medic station up there was great. They took real good care of her and, you know, made sure she cooled down, and we were even able to get back after the lightning delay to watch the rest of the game, so that was cool.
Customer service.
I wanted to ask you guys, do you feel that our pass rush is going to continue to be successful against San Diego, especially since, like, McNeil isn't going to be playing for them? And is our secondary, specifically Derek Cox, going to bounce back this week against the Chargers receivers?
Well, I think that the pass rush can be good in San Diego. The left tackle, Dombrowski, is kind of like what Campman faced against Denver here, and that you got a guy who is really a guard playing tackle. But I have a feeling with what Aaron Campman did against Denver, and San Diego's not going to leave this guy all alone.
When was the last time the Jaguars had a guy worthy of chipping? That's great news.
Well, sometimes it's not the guy that's on. I mean, trust me, Aaron Campman, if I'm an offensive coordinator, wherever Campman's at, I'm going to have another guy on him. I mean, every single time. Mm-hmm. But he's a pass rusher that's not a like feast or famine type pass rusher. If he gets chipped, he can still pressure the pocket, mm-hmm. you know, because he's a kind of a power guy and he lifts arms and for whatever. It's a different technique than a lot of guys use. But I think Derek Harvey can do well against Clary, the right tackle. And I want to see more from. He had some opportunities in that game. It was just kind of okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, a good start for him. The one pass rush that was impressive that he had was one in which he got sacked on, because that was only three guys rushing.
Mm-hmm.
I used to call that pinball. Mm-hmm. And he ended up getting a sack out of it. It was a nice, strong move that he had. So I think they can do some things, but I'm going to go back and say it once again. Terrence Knighton's got to be better.
Appreciate the phone call. 355-NFL-1. Let's go to Don on the west side next. Hello, Don. Welcome to the show.
Okay, guys. Hey, I don't normally listen to you guys unless I'm in my car, and after having an MRI a few minutes ago, I had it on going there and coming back. You know, with the comment earlier, you know, for this guy here and the other one about the Jags being able to handle San Diego, I think after what I saw on the highlights from the San Diego game and what the our defensive guys did this weekend, with the speed, Kampman, Alualu, and you've got Kirk Morrison and Darryl Smith as linebackers. I think they can get some considerable pressure on Rivers and disrupt their plan of attack throughout the game if they can keep that speed up and just keep putting their pressure on him.
You know, there was a guy, Don, before the game Sunday that was very concerned about the linebacking play. Now, I don't remember who that was.
Me.
Oh, it was you.
How did they play?
They played pretty well.
I mean, we know Darryl did.
I know Darryl did.
So did Kirk Morrison.
Okay.
How was Justin?
Okay. Okay. Got room for improvement. I just wanted to kind of throw that
out. No, I absolutely. Wait a minute. I haven't signed off on them yet.
Okay.
It's one game.
My concern was the secondary.
Okay.
And it's still there.
I was concerned with every part of their defense other than the front four. I have felt from the day they drafted those kids in April that and brought Joe Cullen in here. And after I got an idea of what Joe Cullen's all about, I started to get the idea that the front four was going to get fixed. My concerns for them at linebacker is for a lack of depth. It's just not there.
Yeah.
And that has me concerned. And then the other thing that had me concerned is they were hurt all summer long. The secondary, we know all about that. The safety position has been a disaster, the free safety position especially. And, of course, Derek Cox is off to a bad start. So
we
got to get that fixed.
Were you surprised? I mean, I was. I mean, I was shocked when the active-inactives came out, that both Michael Coe and Don Carey were inactive?
I have, Jeff, in my blog, when I dealt with the inactives right at the beginning, I said Don Carey and Michael Coe are notable inactives. I was stunned that both of them were deactivated.
Yeah. And you know, let me add something else. You know, there was concern, obviously, with the secondary. You know, Scotty Starks, who kind of been their nickel mm-hmm. in the preseason, and then William Middleton was going to mm-hmm. move into that role. He's got some game at nickel now.
Middleton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, he does.
He's got some quicks.
He's a good tackler, too.
Yeah, he's a good tackler. Mm-hmm. He's got some quicks. And I kind of like the thought of, because he's got quickness and he's a good tackler and he's at the nickel spot. I mean, that's, you know, Rondae Barber, what's he at, 20-something sacks in his
20
career?
20 sacks, 30 interceptions.
Yeah, I mean, and he's a quick guy. He's a good blitzer. I can see that kind of same role for Middleton at some point.
The one thing that is hitting me is becoming very clear to me now is that the idea of playing Sean Considine at anywhere but free safety was preposterous. You know, putting him in the same secondary with Reggie Nelson, which meant that Nelson had to be the freak because he sure as heck wasn't going to be the strong. Put Sean Considine in an overmatched situation. He is just not going to match up with the Antonio Gates and Dallas Clarks of the world.
Nah, he can hold his own, though. I mean, he's not going to be.
But if
a
you put him
liability.
In free safety, you access his natural instincts, his natural toughness, and his natural smarts. The only thing the guy is lacking is the speed to get to the sideline and cover that over-the-top throw.
Yep, which he didn't get there twice.
That's right, and it's a problem, but I'll tell you what, he makes plays in front of him.
I wish he would have made that pick in the north end zone. It was stepped right in front of him. I mean, it was right there.
He makes plays in front of him.
Real quick, this plays into one of your favorite sayings. I was just looking at the Jaguars' corners. Alabama State, Wingate, Bethune-Cookman, Norfolk State, Furman, and William & Mary.
You find them where you find them.
355-NFL-1. Terry joins us from the Arlington area. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Listen, I'm having a good time listening to you guys. I always enjoy your show. But one of the most frustrating things to me, other than watching the defense let them score 17 points, or is to watch them throw that 5-yard pass, hoping to get the run at the end of it. Back in the Brunel days, I called in and asked that same question, and I can't remember who it was exactly that answered me with, because that's the farthest they can throw it. Now, I know that's not the case now. We've got some pretty good wide receivers out there, and I haven't seen them dragging through that middle like McCardell used to. So I was just wondering, is there some new NFL tradition now that they're not running 10 yards to catch the first down?
I think what he's describing, Jeff, is the check down, which is the outlet, the safety valve. When everyone is covered, you know, just check it down and go to the next play. Maybe you could explain beyond that.
Well, you're talking about throwing the ball down the field. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of vertical element to the passing game against
Denver.
It's
Champ
Bailey and Goodman. Andre Goodman, is that right, Brian?
Yeah. Yes, Andre Goodman.
I mean, these guys are really good.
Yeah.
Mike Sims-Walker was held without a catch, and Brian had asked me earlier, did Champ Bailey follow him all over the field? No, I mean, he was being covered by both.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys were on Mike like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm.
Very talented corners. I thought this may have been David Garrard's best performance, not because of his rating, mm-hmm. not because of the touchdown throws, and that he got everything that they were going to give him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that when he had like 5 incompletions, one of them was dropped by Mike Sims-Walker, so it really should have been 4. But, I mean, on those 4 incompletions, I'm looking at the tape and I'm going, where could he have gone to?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
That's what I meant by the 3rd and 6.
Yeah.
He didn't force it, you know, which was – that said something to me about his development. The fact that he said, I'm not going to try to win. I'm going to try not to lose. Sometimes you have to try not to lose.
You know what's crazy? The top 2 rated quarterbacks in the National Football League this week, Vince Young at number 1, David Garrard at number 2.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that?
You're going to make people wonder if he belongs
Vince Young,
there.
He had a running game, a big time. Oh. He didn't have to do
much,
but
he threw
right?
the ball really
Did
well.
Did he throw it well?
Yes,
oh, sure.
He had a fantastic game.
He completed more than 70% of his passes, too. Mm-hmm. So.
You know, this league after week 1, and it's only week 1, is really upside down. Atlanta's in last place. I'm sorry, Indianapolis is in last place. Kansas City is leading the AFC West, and the other 3 teams all have losses, or all in last place. This is wacko stuff, you know. The Cowboys are off to an 0-1 start. Atlanta's off to an 0-1 start. These are Super Bowl favorites. Let's see, what else we got? Injuries all over the place. It's wide open. Get hot. Go ahead. Fix what little problems you have, you know, and accentuate your strengths. Who knows?
Why not? We take this final break and come back and wrap up Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna on a Wednesday evening for a West Coast trip. Right after that, after this on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. Chippy, real chippy before we get on a plane ride out to the West Coast. Nick's got a little bit of salt in the wound tonight. Hey, let's talk about some games around the National Football League week 2. I'm just looking to see what strikes your fancy.
Not as strong as last week.
Last week was strong.
At
all right, well, Baltimore's at Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Well, a year ago, that was a great game.
Yeah, but the Bengals got T.O. now. They're crap.
Listen to this lineup. Arizona at Atlanta. You tell me whether you're even interested in it at all.
Keep going.
Tampa Bay at Carolina.
Ooh.
Baltimore at Cincinnati.
Oh, wait a minute. Tampa Bay at Carolina has just got to be the absolute turd.
Oh, no. It gets worse.
Oh.
How about Kansas City at Cleveland?
Wow.
Chicago at Dallas.
Eh.
Philadelphia at Detroit.
Oh, my God.
Buffalo at Green Bay.
Oh, that's a seal clubbing.
Miami at Minnesota. Maybe.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Pittsburgh at Tennessee. There you go.
Good
that's
game.
A good one.
Best game of the week.
Seattle at Denver.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I like that. That's flavorful.
Yeah, all right. Maybe because they're old division rivals. How about this one? St. Louis at Oakland.
Oh!
The
what could the no show? Well, I mean, what could this? The what could the unsold tickets be like in Oakland? It's got to be just
it's preposterous.
Outrageous.
It's preposterous. Here's the
no one will score.
Probably the marquee game of Sunday afternoon: New England at the Jets.
Oh yeah, that's
I mean, that's it. That's why they're going right up against Jaguars and Chargers. Houston's at Washington. That's not a bad
matchup.
That's
a good game.
Giants at Indianapolis.
That's a good one.
Good game. Monday night game, right? Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Jacobs and Bradshaw, they'll run for 400 yards.
Boy, I tell you, that run defense of the Colts, just when you thought maybe they'd do something with it, nothing. How do they fix that?
I don't know.
Through about three more drafts.
Yeah, at least. And then the Monday night game is New Orleans at San Francisco, which when they made it.
I think that'll be a good game.
That's good.
Based on the way that
Singletary's killing them this week. He is just going to kill them this week.
They've got talent on that team now. Mm-hmm.
What did he do when they got back from Seattle? He called a meeting and lathered him?
Yeah.
After the first game of the year.
I talked to Buscelli on Sunday night as I was driving home. He had done the Houston game, the Houston Colts game, and his comment was, Houston's for real.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see any of that?
I didn't see any of it.
Okay. His comment was Houston was for real. He didn't know what to make of the Colts just because Peyton Manning, you know, threw for 433 yards and three touchdowns and they lost.
Whoa, on that Peyton Manning thing. There was 8 minutes to go in the game and they were sitting on 10 points.
Oh, yeah.
So the preponderance of those yards and points were after the fact. It was in mop up time. They were down 27-10 with 8 minutes to go in the game.
Well, but as Loggy said, when Peyton Manning's on the field, you still know they've got a chance to win the ball game. So
always.
Trying to,
I understand he's one heck of a quarterback.
Trying to judge where they're actually at. Are they good or are they not as good?
But
as
with
you 10 think?
Points on
they're
the
not
scoreboard,
a great team.
With 8 minutes to play, did he really play that well?
I don't know. All I'm saying is that's what Tony said.
Okay.
Indianapolis is not a great team. He is a great quarterback. That's what they are.
Can he keep carrying them as their roster deteriorates?
No. No, I mean, he can carry him somewhat because, I mean, you still got some fantastic players on offense. I mean, he's got some pretty good guys. I mean, Reggie Wayne would be good wherever he is.
Right.
Dallas Clark would be good wherever he is. But once you kind of get past that, I mean, the other guys.
Pierre Garçon.
I mean, yeah, he makes those guys real good.
He makes the offensive line good, too.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, the left tackle.
Johnson.
The one highlight that I did see of that game. Mario Williams just chewing him up. I mean, play after play after play. And one of the marquee matchups of this season, in my mind, is going to be Eugene Monroe versus Mario Williams. And I'm talking about the new Eugene Monroe against Mario Williams.
Jaguars are going to put the kill shot on him in 3 weeks.
On the Colts.
Yep.
You think the Colts are going to come in here 1-2?
I think the Colts are going to lose Sunday to the Giants. I think the Giants are going to run a ball on them, and then they got to go out to Denver, and that is they don't match up well against Denver.
They'll crush Denver.
I don't think so. I think that Orton will. I'm sorry. I think Marino will run the ball on them, and I think they've got the secondary.
Yeah,
to
they
match
do.
Up.
They got a good secondary. That'd be a good one.
Jim
to watch.
Bailey's phenomenal. He and lost.
He's not the best corner on that team anymore.
Really?
No, Goodman's
better,
I think.
I thought he played very well on Sunday.
He played pretty good, but, I mean, you go look at Mike Thomas had two big catches over Champ Bailey.
Yeah.
Mike Thomas, I don't recall a catch that he had over Goodman.
What's with Mike Sims-Walker? What's up?
I mean, he had the one ball early he just dropped on when he got whacked by Dawkins. And then after that, he didn't get a whole lot of separation. I mean, simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Thomas actually kind of got away with a little bit. You know what I mean? A little push off here and there. And made some plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to watch this week because these corners in San Diego are good. But they're not nearly as good as what Denver had.
Really? Quentin Jammer's not?
Nah, they're not. They're not Champ Bailey and Goodman. Goodman is a heck of a football player. We'll see how they deal in San Diego. They got to have time because those guys up front are pretty good in San Diego.
All right, so we touched on Houston briefly and Indy briefly. Any thoughts on Tennessee? Did you see enough of them?
I don't.
I mean, Chris Johnson is clearly Chris Johnson, 74-yard touchdown, 142 yards in the day.
The good thing is we'll be able to see a good chunk of that game before the game this week in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
know, and that to me, that's the game of the week.
No, that's a game Tennessee should win now. I mean, let's not forget. Yeah, I mean, starts. Dennis Dixon was.
Yeah, but it's all about Pittsburgh's defense.
Yeah.
I mean, Pittsburgh held Matt Ryan to how many points?
9.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I understand, but it's tough to keep holding teams under 10 points every week, and they're not going to score much more than
Pittsburgh 10. Has 3 legitimate Pro Bowl linebackers. 3.
Woodley Harrison and Timmons.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the fourth one, Ferrier, he ain't bad.
Mm-hmm. Virginia grad.
Hey, that team can bring it now.
I got another one. He's a rookie this year. His name is Sylvester, and he will soon be the fourth instead of Ferrier.
Rookie pick this year.
Yeah, his name is Sylvester from Utah.
From Utah.
Mm-hmm.
Inside backer?
Yeah, they're crazy about him.
Who was the guy who used to – Ernie Holmes, that used to line up inside with LeVon Kirkland? I was just remembering those old – what an Ernie Holmes? The guy from Florida
A&M. Joel Steed.
No, the linebacker that used to line up inside with Pittsburgh.
Holmes.
It was Ernie Holmes.
That
was Earl Holmes.
Earl. Yeah. Sorry, Holmes. I'm thinking
yeah.
Fats Holmes.
Florida A&M guy.
Oh, yeah. And I was just, he and LeVon Kirkland, yeah. And then outside you had Greg Lloyd.
And Gilden.
And Gilden, yeah.
And Kevin Green.
Chad Brown.
Yeah, well, Chad Brown.
Chad Brown. Take your pick through those years.
Chad Brown, they screwed up on that one. That was what, you know.
He's the first guy that I remember them letting go.
Yeah.
They really wasn't ready to be let
him go, and they let Woodson go, and that's the two they regret it.
They have a history of linebackers, don't they? All right, folks, we are wrapping it up this evening. Thanks for joining us. Of course, we will take the air at 1 o'clock with the Sunny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show on Sunday from Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego. Join us then. Have a great rest of your week.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV FM Ponte Vedra Beach.